afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the 4-H show. I'm sorry, the 5-H show. We changed our name a little while ago. It is the 5-H show, and the 5-H's stand for health, happiness, harmony, humor, and humanity. And we are celebrating here today election season. We've had a few folks coming through the studio here who are running for office. And I just happened to get connected with Elizabeth Brown. And she is live in the studio here today. And Elizabeth is running for the House of Representatives. So her name is going to be on the ballot in the Washington Chittenden District. And she is currently a school board member for Harvard Union. And she is running as a Democrat, and she has some really, really important focus points here that I really can't wait to talk to her about, and including schools. She's worried about short staffing issues in the businesses, which is really important. People aren't, I think, paying enough attention to that. She's worried about school funding and how Vermonters can afford all of the things going on these days. And so we have Elizabeth right here, right now, with no further ado. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Amy. So happy to be here. Warren is absolutely one of my favorite spots. I just love the valley. So thanks for having me over here today.
I know it is a beautiful place to come to do a radio show. We're really lucky. We have this view right out the window. It's just amazing. Yeah. So tell us about yourself. I'm really interested. Have you run for, let's start with, you're on the school board, right?
I am on the school board. So that was recent. I was just put on the school board, actually in the April time horizon. So I'll just step back here for a moment. As I left, the corporate world back in December, I had been sort of involved in that. Busy, full-time, working mom, flying around a lot, just trying to juggle everything that, the two working parent home is trying to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Trying to stay on top of things as much as possible in terms of what's going on with our state and what's going on with policy and the direction we're headed. And really, when I had that opportunity to just dive in a little bit deeper in terms of what was going on with our legislature, I thought, I said to my husband, if I don't get involved, we're going to leave. And that's a huge, strong statement, because I absolutely love this state. And we can get into how I came to be up here back in 1996. But I love this state, and I want to protect this state, and I want others to be able to thrive here in this state. And so that was a strong statement. So just paying attention to what was going on with the schools and the schools funding, and three of the four seats for Waterbury for the Harwood Union School Board were actually vacant, and there's nobody who ran in March. And so I applied to the select board and was chosen and was put on the school board. So that is quite recent, which has been fantastic and eye-opening. But I think as I started going down the rabbit hole of trying to understand what all the school funding was about, it was very clear that the change that needs to happen at the state house.
Yeah, I really appreciate, in one of the articles about you, you point out how much of the control is really at the state level. These school boards really have very little say, and I've noticed that at my own school board.
And I think that's confusing, because we as Vermonters, we value that local control. We're told we have that local control. We're voting on these budgets thinking we have this local control, but there's so many mandates that come through. So it makes it very difficult then for these school boards and the school administration to make these budgets work. It was very, very difficult. We went through, for Harwood, we went through three votes to get that through. And that was extremely stressful. It was stressful on the communities. We were pitting communities against each other and teachers and students and just, the retirees in the community who are saying, I can't afford this. But then the parents who are saying, but it's for the children. And it was really just heartbreaking to see how that all came about. And if you dig into the history, this should never have happened. There is all sorts of documentation, research, studies, experts who have come in. This train wreck has been a long time in the making. And I know our governor has been vocal about that. And there's been a number of House representatives, senators, a governor himself who have delivered, suggestions for how we get in front of this funding mess that we're in. And nothing's been done. And so you have to kind of question why. Is it people who are more concerned with their political capital and making it hard to do the right thing? Paralysis is never the answer. And I feel like sometimes that's what's been going on.
Yes, exactly. Folks feeling like, why bother? It's overwhelming. And then just leaving. I mean, I actually pulled that quote out. I'm going to use that on my website. When I post your interview, I got involved. I get involved or we leave, you told your husband. And so many people actually, I keep running into, are saying that. They're either just leaving or they're digging in their heels.
And that's what's so scary to me is how many people are just quietly packing up.
Me too.
And leaving. You know, we've got a lot of apathy. I know the governor just recently used that word. I think a lot of people are checked out. They feel like they've got no voice when it comes to our government anymore. You know, they see it more as politics versus participating in their government. And they're leaving. And so you have people who have literally been here for generations who have given up. Or you have workers, you know, people with good quality jobs who love the way of life up here who just say, I can't do it anymore. And, you know, my fear is this is not going to show up in the numbers anytime soon. And so, you know, you ask anyone who's pulling those numbers at the State House what's going on, and they'll tell you, oh, no, it's flat, or we've got people moving in and we're fine. We are not fine. And when you talk to business owners who are telling you they're losing quality employees, or you talk to employers who are saying, I'm trying to bring people in because I'm desperate for help, but they can't find a place to live, that's a real problem. And if we do not get in front of this immediately and try to provide some relief in terms of affordability, we're going to have no one left in the state to work.
Right. Yeah. I was working on the front lines, like in minimum wage jobs during COVID. And I came right out, right in the beginning, started working on the front lines. And it was like a ghost town. It was like body snatchers. Where was everybody? Everybody kept saying, and then our employers had such a hard time keeping people and then hiring people at all. And we were so short-staffed all the time, which means the staff left have to work doubly or triply as hard. And I love how you kind of pointed out in one of your articles how the owners can't even take a day off. I mean, they're just working 24/7 trying to cover for the people they can't hire.
That's right. And, you know, to me, if you ask, you know, what is a path forward? And there's a couple ways you can go about this. I mean, we were in an absolute financial mess in our state. We've got government spending up 46% since 2019, you know, and I've pulled a report to compare us to other states. The other states are not up that same amount. And if you actually compare our budget to New Hampshire, it's similar, but New Hampshire has twice the people, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying we want to be New Hampshire. And I think all of us are willing to pay a little bit more to preserve the environment we have, the beauty we have in this state. I think there's a certain limit, though, and I think people have been pressed beyond that limit in terms of affordability. So it is quite hard. It's hard to find fulfilling work here that pays enough to sustain a suitable, comfortable, happy lifestyle here. Nothing excessive. We're Vermonters. We're kind of frugal, right?
Yeah.
And that's okay. And we want to preserve that. But the way out of here is not to bring in these big businesses and big industry. And, you know, that's certainly not the way to do it. But we need to make sure our small businesses thrive. Mm-hmm. And we need to be able to attract in those business owners to sustain them. And we need to make it affordable for those business owners. And we need to not tax those employees too much, and they're getting taxed on all sides, you know, whether that's the property taxes or the new tax that we're going to be paying starting in July around, you know, childcare. And childcare is critically important. But when you just start layering all this in, and then, you know, we've got the veto session coming up, who knows what's going to happen with our home heating, you know, and that potential additional expense and tax on us. So, you know, all those layers just keep making it more and more unaffordable for people to stay here.
Right. And I find it really interesting where you had pointed out that it's up 46% since 2019, that's about the time when it suddenly became really difficult to get involved, right? Because there was the shutdown, and while government was on Zoom, it was really difficult to go in there and advocate with your legislators, and it feels like things were rammed through.
Yeah, and you hear that, you know, there was some COVID money that came in, and it's hard to cut programs once it's there. And,
exactly.
You know, the actual federal dollars have not increased in that time. That's actually been flat.
Oh.
And the reality is we don't have a lot of revenue streams when it comes to Vermont. And so in order to meet that increase, you are taxing the same people over and over again.
That's what I saw in our school district budget. They kept, initially it was COVID money funded to have this nurse, you know, head of of the, you know, the medical supervision, because suddenly it was so big and complicated where it never was before. And then they also have this new medical tracking system and things. So those jobs stayed. And so now we, the taxpayers, yeah, are paying for those.
And it's hard. And I get it. Government's not a business. And I think you sort of rub people the wrong way when you say that. And I'm coming from the business world where there is that accountability and you're constantly looking at those expenses and you're constantly looking at accountability and metrics and are you getting what you need to out of those investments? And, you know, I've been criticized a little bit for coming at it that way and to say, you know, who are you to look at government and to question whether or not these programs are effective? But I think we're even hearing that from the governor. And, you know, it was looking at the numbers today. I mean, he's had the most vetoes of any governor. I mean, that tells you something. And it's not that he's a bad person, but when he's seeing these bills come across and that, can they be implemented? Do we have the capacity to absorb this? Can this be effectively managed over time? What are those success metrics? I mean, though, that is that business mentality you have to bring in. It's not just going in with a big heart. We all have big hearts. Vermonters want to help everyone. At our core, that's who we are, right? Mm-hmm. But when it's too much of a burden and it's wasteful, it's not well thought through. We have not done the risk assessments. We don't know how to implement it. We don't know if we can even absorb it. You know, our government workers, there you have to push back. And that's what's happening right now. And it's really sort of disheartening how it gets twisted, you know, in this political realm of, you know, the right versus the left about this. And when it comes down to it, I think we have a lot more common ground than our politicians want us to believe. And that's what we need to be focused on.
Yes. Oh, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, I was just at the State House yesterday. There was a rally about the vetoes to uphold the vetoes in support of it, largely run by Republicans. You know, this rally was. And I was the only press there. And I'm at a little community radio station here, you know, and I did my best and I did record every speaker. And for those of you listening out there, if you're waiting to hear from that rally and you saw me there, I will be playing that next week or the week after. I just have to compile all the recordings. But isn't that sad? I mean, here are folks who really, they're saying we can't afford this. We're being literally driven out of the state. They said that over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we kind of dove right into the serious, you know, like what, you know, what are your initiatives? But let's back up for just a moment. Like, how did you get here? I am really curious. And what's your background and things like that?
Yeah. So I grew up in Massachusetts.
And we're speaking with Elizabeth Brown today.
Yep. Full disclosure. So I grew up in Massachusetts, a small rural town, about 3,000 people in the town. My eighth grade class had, I think, like 26 kids in it. So
great.
Yeah, my parents were divorced. I had a small mountain in between, and that was where I grew up, was playing on the mountain in the woods. And so just to put things in perspective, so coming up here to Vermont felt right at home. And so I came up to the University of Vermont in 1996, studied business, and ended up taking a job that was based in Stowe. There was a startup company there. I had done some work for the Department of Economic Development. And I had asked the commissioner, I said, listen, I'd like to stay up here just a bit longer. You know, I've got some opportunities with some other organizations where I had been offered jobs in New York and Chicago and D.C. And my heart was still here and I wasn't ready to let go. And so I was quite lucky to step into this startup, which was actually, and I'm dating myself, it was a dot-com bank. It was an internet bank, which was kind of fun. And two of the founders were based here. And so that's
an internet bank.
It was an internet bank called everbank.com. And so that's how the banking career started. You know, I call myself sort of the accidental banker. And it was a good time and it was fun and I got to stay here. And over the years, you know, it was bought up, it grew, ended up growing into a $50 billion bank eventually. It was purchased by TIAA, which is a big global company, Teachers Insurance Annuity Association. So like a lot of people who work in the healthcare space and the nonprofit space have their pensions and their retirement, their annuities with this organization. So I've, you know, operated in sort of that bigger realm of financial services, but my roots can also be sort of smaller and more entrepreneurial. So just getting back to, again, how did I end up here? I mean, that was it. I got sucked in. I got sucked into the lifestyle here. And I was very fortunate because I was able to find fulfilling work and to make it work here because a lot of people can't. And we're exporting. I mean, we've got all of these colleges and universities here and we're exporting that talent because we just don't have the jobs for them to stay. Mm-hmm. And I think so many of those students would love to stay if they had the opportunity to. But I think most people find that really difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, so you have that background in business. So how do you think that would really help you in government?
So I sort of joke that I'm a strategist by trade. And so people say, well, that sounds like a fancy sort of fluffy white collar job sort of thing. And but what that really means to me is that I know how to get really laser focus on what matters. And so within these organizations, I was head of strategy for, I guess, the past 4 or 5 years at the bank. Before that, the consumer strategy, retail strategy at TIA. And so that was just working across the organization to say, like, what do we need to accomplish for all the different stakeholders? So that would be your shareholders, your owners, you know, your regulators, your customers, your employees. Mm-hmm. What are we trying to accomplish here? And how do you kind of whittle that down to a handful of major pillars, initiatives, right? What are the major programs or projects you're going to do? How are you going to measure that? Who's accountable for driving it? And that's that accountability that we seem to be lacking right now when it comes to our state legislature. And I think those are key skills that I think would be incredibly valuable. And I think we deserve to have that. And we have a civilian legislature. And I love the fact that you've got people with all sorts of backgrounds who come in here. And that's how it was always supposed to be, right? It's like, bring your skills, bring your experience, bring your perspectives, listen to your constituents, all come together. And that's how you're going to create great policy. And to some degree, I still think we have some of that. And then to some degree, I think we have some folks who are coming up and they are more career politicians. And, you know, they've been trained in terms of how to do that. But I think they've lost sight in terms of who are they really accountable to. And that's their constituents. That's their voters. That's Vermont. That's Vermonters. And that's what we need to bring the focus back to.
Yeah, I was reading in this article about where you were talking about why you were running, and you pointed out that you feel like Vermonters want real people from their communities to be representing them.
I mean, that's what I'm hearing, and it's been really interesting for me. Is, you know, I was floating this idea by people, you know, in my community across Vermont, former colleagues of mine, even across the country, and when I spoke to them about, you know, this is what I want to do, here's my experience, what do you think about this? It resonates, right? And I think that's what they want. You know, they just want that, like you said, they just want some real people in there, you know, where they feel like they can have that trust and that accountability.
Yeah, I mean, so you're raising kids and you have you have to have a job, you have to pay the taxes, you're right there amongst us, you know, really kind of like pulling your weight and getting things done every
Absolutely.
Day.
Absolutely. And I think that was one of the I wouldn't say the main reason, but it's certainly one reason that I felt the need to run. I mean, I looked at my children and I said to them, when you have the capacity and the capabilities to help, to make change, when you see things that are going wrong, when you see things off the rail, you have an obligation to step in, right? And I think that was hard. I mean, my daughter, who is coming up on 11, her first response to me was, you know, Mom, I feel like I just got you back, because she spent a lot of her childhood with me exporting my services, leaving on an airplane all the time. And I said, honey, you know, wrap my arms around her. I'm 20 minutes down the road in Montpelier. I'm not leaving you again. And then my son, who's coming up on 16, was very concerned, knowing that I tend to be an outspoken person, you know, willing to take risks, willing to put myself out there. And his biggest concern was, what are the perceptions going to be of my friends' parents, my school teachers? How am I going to be judged? Because he knows that I'm going to be a disruptor. I think he's wrapped his head around it. I think without him saying it, he's probably proud that I'm running. But that was difficult. It was a difficult decision for my family for those reasons.
Yeah, well, and that really keeps you firmly rooted on the ground with the reality of what it is, you know, in these small communities.
Certainly, yeah. Keeps you in check, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been in Waterbury area this whole time?
Most of the time, yeah. So I think I've been in Waterbury for 18 years now. Before that, I spent a couple years in Johnson, which was where my first home was. But then we moved here and we've been raising the kids in Waterbury ever since.
Fantastic. So I'm speaking with Elizabeth Brown. She is running for the House of Representatives here in Vermont. And what towns are in the Washington-Chittenden district?
Yeah, so it's Waterbury, Waterbury Center, Bolton, Buell's Gore, and Huntington. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. There's been some redistricting over time, which gets a little bit challenging. But certainly those are the five towns that I'll be representing.
Fantastic. So how are you going to go about this? I noticed you do have a website. I was going to let folks know. I wrote it down here. You probably know it off the top.
Yeah, it's ElizabethBrown4Vermont.com. So I've got a lot of information out there. There's another interview I also did on WDEV earlier this week. So that is also posted under news, which is out there. And feel free to get in touch with me. There's ways to contact me if you have any interest in reaching out. So how am I getting in touch with people? Heading over to Huntington, there's a fantastic general store there. Bowdry's is there. And so Mike O'Brien is hosting two beer tastings, actually, this Thursday and the following Thursday. So that's kind of like the center of the town where everything happens. I'll be there 5 to 7 the next two Thursdays. We're going to be in the Not Quite Independence Day parade on June 29th in Waterbury as well. So I'm recruiting people to join me in that, which is going to be a lot of fun. Also hoping to have a town hall in the Waterbury area as well, as I'd like to meet people, but not just meet and greet and tell them about me. I really want to hear what they've got to say as well. I've also had some really generous people reach out and who are setting up meet and greets in their neighborhoods and bringing their friends or colleagues over. So that's another option. If what I'm saying resonates to you and you're in these communities and, you know, you'd like me to come over and spend some time with people in your community, I would love the opportunity to meet them and to speak with them.
Yeah, what a fun community that you have to do this sort of thing. You know, there are so many opportunities.
It's been fantastic. I mean, the different types of people who have reached out. I mean, I've got retirees who are reaching out, who are excited. They want my signs. They want to provide support. I've got parents of very young children who I, you know, my children a little bit older who are reaching out. And, you know, they basically have said to me, I've never been involved in politics anymore, but what you're saying is meaningful to me and I want to help you. And so I think it's really across the board. And, you know, I have people who, you know, are single and, you know, in their 20s and the message. So that's what to me is so exciting, is that I think that when you just nail it and you listen to people and you find that common ground and that message resonates, it's really timeless, it's ageless. It's really simple if you think about it. And I think we need to boil it down to that. And again, just get back to representing their needs and wants, you know, the needs and wants of Vermonters and bringing the focus back to our state.
I know it seems kind of simple to me, too. It seems like we're tripping over common ground, you know, if we just could focus on that more. You know, what are some of the things that you're hearing from people? What are some of their top concerns?
I mean, I think the taxes and the affordability are number one. You know, even if there are people who are like, you know, I could absorb that additional amount, but it's more like, what am I getting for it and why should I? Mm-hmm. So I think that is absolutely number one. And I think when property tax bills hit in July, if you haven't been paying attention, that's going to be really eye-opening. And, you know, if the home heating stuff goes through and what's going on with, you know, the energy bill, the renewable energy, which is also going to drive up costs to Vermonters, if people are not paying attention to this, it's just going to start adding up. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that I'm also hearing is just around jobs, right? So even people who are in good jobs are struggling. You know, I was talking to one woman who is a nurse, and she said, I really don't want the nurses to go on strike again, but we're having a hard time making ends meet, you know. And for example, if you're an OR nurse and you have to live within 20 minutes of the hospital, but you can't afford to live there anymore, what are you going to do? So, I mean, that's a struggle. We keep hearing, you know, that healthcare, you know, the costs are through the roof. But then if you actually look at the nurses themselves, I mean, they're trying to make ends meet. You have teachers who are trying to make ends meet in the community to be able to raise their own children in the same community where they're teaching. So the affordability is just sort of piling on, and it's not just the cost of the actual home, it's everything else in addition to that. In addition to, you know, what is the cost of food here? What is the cost to put fuel in your vehicle? It adds up. And so, again, I might sound like a broken record, but we need to bring some immediate relief to people. Mm-hmm. We can't continue to pile it on.
Yeah. So which committees and what sorts of ideas are you really interested in getting behind if you are elected?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. I've had a number of people ask me that question. So obviously I'm passionate about the schools and the education. Actually, as part of the yield bill, there is a lengthy portion of it that goes into detail in terms of what this education committee is focused on over the course of the summer, bringing recommendations in October and sort of finalizing what that looks like in December. And that's ambitious. It is the right scope, 100%. It will be fascinating to see what comes out of that. Like I said, they've been dabbling with it, perhaps dabbling isn't the right word, but they've been working on it for a number of years. There's a lot of inputs, but certainly the education component is something that's very interesting to me. Obviously, as somebody who's into numbers and finance, knows my way around a balance sheet and a P&L, and yes, there's definitely some money committees where I think we all could benefit to have me participating in those as well. So we'll see, what the opportunities are. I think that there's probably a number of areas where my skills could certainly be utilized.
Right. I have heard people even in the legislature saying that they need more of those skills at the table, especially connected to the education questions.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. I was really curious that you're really interested in the child care problem and that you've noticed that there are less child care providers. And that is definitely the case over the past 20 years or so, or yeah. What are you thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, my children were in daycare as well. I was a full-time working mom. My husband and I both worked. And so we, had the opportunity to, use a number of the daycare facilities in our area, the Waterbury-Stowe area, some fantastic daycare providers and teachers there, many of whom I'm still in contact with too, and they check in on my kids, which is really heartwarming, right?
So that's great.
Yeah. But I think over time it's that delicate balance between, regulation and I what I'm hearing is, and I would like to go a little bit deeper on this, is just trying to understand, we need more facilities. We need more flexibilities. Not all children need to be in big facilities, and they're certainly not going to thrive there. Home daycares are also critically important as well. And so I think it takes a lot of diversity in terms of being able to provide those types of opportunities for our young children to support those working parents. And so I think there's an opportunity here too. Evaluate what we have. How many have we had in the past? What do we have now? What is preventing people from entering the space or providing these types of services? And how can we better support them?
Yes, because I saw that happen. I'm so glad that you picked up on that, because not many people are picking up on that fact that it was the regulations and the professionalizing of child care providers, which sounded great at the time, right? We want to professionalize. Yeah. We want to get paid more. We want more qualifications. We want to be treated as experts, and all of this. But it made it so expensive. And I saw all of these, grandmothers and mothers who were opening their homes to other children, whether it was just a couple other children or even more than a couple, but a home-based childcare, which was very friendly and relaxed for the kids. They could come home, after school, feel like they're coming home, even though they weren't coming to their home. But it was in a home-like environment with, with maybe like elders even who had some, values to instill in the kids, that you just don't get in a professional credentialed setting necessarily. Yeah. And I really feel like that was where we saw this real crisis come in. Because it's expensive to run a daycare now, and it's not very profitable.
I'm a big fan of diversification, right? And, I'll put my analytical hat on, and also reduces risk, right? But beyond...
Ooh, what do you mean by that, reduces risk?
Well, I mean, we'll get there in a moment when it comes to, like, energy, for example, right? But when you put all your eggs in one basket, for example, with childcare, if you say, we're only going to do these large facilities, well, what happens when? Things happen, and then... maybe there's not a facility in a particular area, and then all of a sudden there's no childcare, and we live in small towns, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it's really important to have you know, these childcare opportunities of all different sizes. And, you know, as I said, not all children are going to thrive in a larger facility. You know, my son went to a slightly bigger one, and I think he excelled there, and that worked for him. My daughter needed something much smaller, much more nurturing, and that worked for her. And I think being able to have those opportunities to be able to read what your child needs, what's available, keeping those connections in the community, that's what it's about.
Yes, and that proximity, right? Having the hospital near you and the daycare near you and your work near you.
And that's a big part of what Vermont is, you know. So, you know, there's been some consolidations with some of the hospitals even. I'm a big fan of Copley. That's where both my children were born. I had two major surgeries up there, too. I love the fact that I had the opportunity to be there and to be cared for at a small facility by people I knew in the community. I mean, how lucky are we to have that?
Right. And now with all these traveling nurses coming in to fill these slots, it's really getting further and further afield.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell us more about
the diversity.
Diversity
thing.
And so, energy sounds exciting.
Yeah, no, it's an anti-fragile, you know, approach to things. But, you know, we've all lived through ice storms up here in Vermont. I was at school when the ice storm hit. It was that 97, 98 time horizon, right?
Yeah, when the trees were just covered
yeah.
in ice.
And I had been in Massachusetts at the time, and I remember coming through the Northfield area and just seeing the devastation. And by the time I got to Burlington, it really was quite shocking to me, you know, what Vermont was experiencing. And I think hardy Vermonters know and understand you need to diversify your energy and your fuel sources, you know, as best as you can. And not everyone can. But I think that trying to move everything to electric to a grid can be a dangerous proposition. You know, that's the bottom line. And so I think wherever possible that you can diversify fuel and energy sources, we should be thinking about what that looks like.
Yeah, and I've heard more and more people saying the incentives are in going electric. You know, heat pumps, which are electric, you know, getting off of all these other fuels and onto electric, which I thought was interesting because it felt like we were being pushed away from electric heat a number of years ago. You know, now we're being pushed towards it. It's like it keeps switching up.
Which is another important point, to, you know, I think back in the 70s, right? Like a lot of homes just had that electric heat and then you move away from it. So it's making sure you're not always putting your eggs in the same basket, I think, is really important, and that you have future optionality, because we can think we know everything right now. Mm-hmm. But anyone who's lived a few decades knows it comes back around. You see these patterns and things change.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are here on the 5-8 show speaking today. I am here speaking today with Elizabeth Brown, and you live in Waterbury.
Like, I do.
Fantastic. Who is running for the House of Representatives. And let's see here. And so what do you like to do for fun? you were going to ride your bike or
something? I was going to. So, yes, we're in East Warren at the Common Store here. And I told Amy when she invited me onto the show, I said, gosh, that's one of my favorite rides to do on my gravel bike. I love to come through Devil's Washbowl over in Roxbury and up the backside. It's one of the most gorgeous rides. And so, certainly when I first made Vermont my home, cycling became very important to me. I think it's absolutely the most beautiful way to see our gorgeous state. And so even in the winter, I took up fat biking too, so I can go play around in the woods in the winter as well. But yes, I love my cycling. I love my cycling community. Really anything that's outside, anything that can get me dirty, I'm pretty happy with. And then you'll see me a lot of the times on the sideline with my kids, who are both active in sports as well.
Ah, fantastic. Yeah, so an active, whole active family. so let's see. And trade schools. Yes, I did want to ask you about that, too. You support skills programs in trade schools for critical skills to deliver much-needed services.
I was just talking to someone about this the other day. You know, we've made it difficult for people to quickly get into the trades. And this actually applies to education as well, as we're losing more and more teachers in the nursing space as well. We need to get talent into these jobs. And so that's not to say that we don't do things in a thoughtful way, and that we make sure that the people who are receiving those services are doing so in a safe and sound manner. But they think there are certainly ways that we can accelerate and leverage programs and trainings that we have in the state to make sure that people can move more quickly into these spaces. I'll just use myself as an example. So I just left a business career. You know, one thing I had thought about was, how could I get into teaching?
Yeah.
And right now, that's going to be difficult. It's going to be a multi-year process. And that's not to say the teachers who have gone through that multi-year process, they obviously have a lot of training, providing incredible value. But we do need to look at opportunities to accelerate this, because we are losing our workers, and especially in the trades and in electric and plumbing. I think the average age is over 55 right now, which is a really scary proposition. And I think we're actually seeing that, you know, it's not just a Vermont thing. I was speaking to my father in Massachusetts the other day, and he said the same thing. You know, that is really difficult. You need an electrician or your plumber, good luck to you trying to find one. And so we need to be doing more in terms of whether it's identifying students who can thrive in those jobs earlier, or looking to people to have that career change. You know, I know somebody who entered that space as an electrician in his 40s, and he is loving his new work. But we need to make sure that there are, again, those opportunities, those schools, the education available, readily available to accelerate that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've met a few young people who are going into that field recently, and they have such confidence. They're like, oh yeah, this is going to be like falling off a log to get a job and make sure I can make a living. They're so just happy.
That's great,
you know,
to
with
hear.
That confidence. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I was curious, Campaign for Vermont, I noticed that, and if you could tell me more about that. I was curious about that organization. I found a little like bio about you, and it says on there that you, that just being part of it doesn't mean that you support everything they do. I didn't know if you know much about them.
The Campaign for Vermont?
Yeah.
No, I think they're a nonprofit organization that follows some of the issues. So I mm-hmm. think we need multiple sources who are staying on top of some of the legislative issues. So I think that they do a pretty good job of being able to provide, like, you know, bipartisan's perspective in terms of some of the legislative issues that are going on and the bills that are going through. So I'm certainly not involved in the organization, just have used them as a resource to try and stay on top of the issues, because sometimes I would say with even our local media, it's hard to find unbiased perspectives of what is going on. And, you know, people need to be able to think for themselves and to just have the valid data points and to be able to reach their own conclusions.
Right. So I just thought I'd bring up that organization. I had never heard of them before either. And I really like the way that they phrased it. Like, just by being part of the organization doesn't mean you support everything we're educating people about. Yeah, I thought that was really kind of cool. I have noticed too that as far as training the youth for the future, I've sat on my regional planning commission for a couple of years, and I noticed that a lot of the training for youth is really focusing on the tech trades, something to do with, like, they want them to work in technology, kind of, you know, and work in more of like a factory setting. And that was where they were really focusing the youth of today. And I just kept thinking that what made Vermonters so hireable across the country, you know, you'd be hired in a minute if you said you were from Vermont, was that farm kid, problem solving, skills based background, that they just had been raised on a farm. They learned how to fix things. So when you're saying electrical and plumbing, you know, you need to know that you're even interested in the trades to go into the trades, right? You have to get your hands dirty, be in there, start fixing stuff, start learning about how these mechanisms work when you're young, really, to really think that you're even going to want to do that later. So what do you think about that, about losing our farm kid mentality? And then the farmers I speak to are saying, who's going to take over my farm? They're so worried because even their own kids have moved out of state and don't want to take over the farm. And how can we connect the kids with the farms, you know, even if they aren't growing up on them? Is there something we could do with the schools?
And we're losing our farms. I mean, and that's the saddest part, right? So, yes, I mean, I think that probably decades ago, you know, even 20 years ago, there are far more farms that you could go down and help with haying. And, you know, you'd have that experience of being trained to be able to run that tractor. And I just don't think the opportunities are there as much for the kids anymore. So, I mean, you need the farms to be able to even provide that sort of exposure to them. I think that, you know, even just over in Waterbury, we have a handful of farms. I feel quite lucky that we're able to get our meat from the Woodards on Loomis. We've got other friends. We get our pork and our chicken from them. You know, you've got your local CSA, and we're incredibly lucky here in Vermont in terms of the quality of food that you can potentially get. I think that we need to increase those opportunities foundational to our health. And so I think your question was, how do you get those kids more involved? We need families more involved to just understand where the food can come from. And I think that if we're providing more support to those farms who are literally our neighbors, you're going to naturally have that connection. You know, I've had people in our town, you know, reach out. I've got a big, strong lacrosse playing, almost 16-year-old, you know, he would be great
knocking on your door.
Being able to go help on, you know, the garlic farm that is literally down the road. So I think there certainly are those opportunities. It's scary to me and terribly sad that it seems like more and more of them are going away. We have some friends who, the mother grew up on a farm, dairy farm up in the Northeast Kingdom, and her brother's trying to, you know, take over that farm right now. And it's a real struggle. And my daughter actually was up there mucking stalls up there, I think in the April time horizon. That's how she spent her school vacation in April. She had a great time up there with the cows. But sadly, they were pouring the milk down the drain, which was absolutely heartbreaking because they didn't have enough cows to produce enough milk for the trucks to come and actually take the milk away. And so you're sitting there going, gosh, you're like, we've got hunger in this state right now. And you're pouring the milk down the drain because you're short of cash to not have enough money to get more cow, you know, and so down and down you go. So what are we doing to support our farmers? We need more of them again.
Right. And it seems like every new scheme that's going to save farming, you know, like organic milk, organic dairy. I've spoken with some folks in my town who were part of that right in the very beginning, but the bottom fell out of that too, because now they don't do as many inspections out west. In California, farms, big factory farms, are not as tightly regulated, so they get away with, you know, cuts and, you know, not spending as much. And then these little farms here on the East Coast were just being held under a microscope, and so they were, you know, being regulated to death. And so the rug got pulled out. You know, at first it seemed like they were making a living with this organic milk model. Now that got pulled out. Then there was hemp a few years ago. People jumped on board of that thinking, oh, this is gonna save us, hemp. But then they grew hemp and they had nowhere to send it, you know.
That's right.
So that system's kind of looking down the road and making sure it's all going to connect and work.
It's such an important, critical component of the culture that we have here, and I think it would be really heartbreaking to lose that. I mean, I think that absolutely needs to be a priority again for the health of our state, our environment here. We need to find other ways, otherwise we're going to start seeing our farms just taken over by fields of solar panels, and I don't think that we want that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there needs to be more discussion and debate. So I like your town hall model of having people come up and share what they think.
They have ideas, you know. People out there who are paying attention have a lot of great ideas, and they need a platform to be able to express that. And, you know, my job here is not to serve my community, it's to represent my community. And there's a big difference.
Ooh, yeah. Can you tease that apart a little bit more?
Well, I mean, I think representing is giving them voice, right? And that's not to say that I'm going to take every single perspective. I mean, that would be absolutely impossible. But it's to hear everyone out, to vet those ideas, to weigh them. To weigh those alternatives, but I'm not going to pretend to have all the answers. That would be extremely arrogant of me, right? And so I think that we have people who are serving, who feel like they are serving. I'm here, I know better than you, mm-hmm. right? With that sort of attitude, you know, and they're also serving other interests as well. And I really have no interest in doing that. You know, I'm authentically who I am. And, you know, my obligation here is to listen to the constituents in the towns in my district.
Wonderful. So Elizabeth Brown, running for House, and how are you going about this? Do you have your own financing? Are you up? Is this a big race? Like, are you going to have to spend a lot of money? Is there a lot of competition for this seat?
That's a great question. So I'm up against two Democratic incumbents who have been in there for quite some time. I'm running against Tom Stevens, who has been in there, I believe, for 16 years now, who is chair of housing in general, as well as Teresa Wood, who is head of human services, and she's chair. And so that is a big race, and nobody has run against them in quite some time. The response has been really overwhelming, not just within our district, but really from others across the state once, you know, word got out that I was interested in running and when people understood my background. So I would say on the donation front, it has been extremely positive. And so that is going to allow me to really build that voice and that brand out there and make sure that people know that I'm an option this year. Right. So they have not had an option in a long time. This is a primary race. People, it's summertime, they're on vacation, you know, they're busy. The days are long. They don't want to be bothered with going out and voting. August 13th is an incredibly important day in our state. And people need to be paying attention to the candidates and they need to go out in the primaries, especially this Democratic primary, and pull a Democratic ticket. You do not necessarily have to be a Democrat to pull a Democratic ticket. So if, you know, any of these voters, if my message is appealing to you, you can get in there and vote on August 13th or by absentee ballot starting June 29th. Go to your town clerk and make your voice heard and put it out there. So I will win, you know, based on the number of folks who get out there and cast their ballot by August 13th.
Do you have any debates or anything set up between now and then?
I did have a conversation with the editor of the Waterbury Roundabout. She was interested in doing that, and Lisa has held debates in the past. So I'm hoping that is another option, but there is nothing scheduled at this time.
Okay, let me know, because I would love to cover it.
That sounds great. I will, Amy.
Yeah, and if they don't, let me know, because we could maybe do one right in here. It would be kind of fun.
This is such a beautiful space. I would be absolutely thrilled to come back here again, and so... Let's stay in touch on that.
Right, because it's that conversation, right? And even with these other folks, Tom Stevens and Teresa Wood, I'm sure there's common ground. I'm sure there's things you disagree on. You know, it'd just be interesting to see you guys have a conversation.
Certainly, yeah. And there's one Republican, too, John Griffin, who's running as a Republican as well, would be a fantastic addition to bring to the table.
Oh, fantastic. So you've got until August 13th. To win the primary, and then it's on to November.
And then the general election, but it's really more of a primary race.
Mm-hmm, because once you get in there, it seems like, that's where this district tends to go.
It tends to.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Interesting. Oh, fantastic. And they're going to be the next two Thursdays from 5 to 7. Where was that again?
But Beaudry's in Huntington. So anyone who is familiar with areas knows that. It's the general store right in the center of town.
Oh, in the general store. How cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if folks want to meet you, Elizabeth Brown is going to be making the rounds.
I will be.
Yes. Fantastic. And what's your website again? Let's say that again.
Yes, it's ElizabethBrownForVermont.com. So there's a lot of information out there, a lot of perspectives, different ways to get in touch with me. Again, if this resonates and you'd like to speak, or if you'd like to hold a meet and greet, or you'd like to join me in the parade, certainly reach out and let me know.
Mm-hmm. And in the parade. Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
I'm lining up the hip hop girls so it'll be fun. And, you know, my friend's old tractor, you know, good Vermont time.
Fantastic. Yeah, so you mentioned for fun you like to ride a bike. What else do you like to do?
Oh, well, I'm an avid reader, so I'm pretty happy just sitting there with a big pile of books. Like to play in my gardens and, you know, when I'm feeling social, hang with friends, but also really happy to just be peaceful out there in the woods. So I keep it pretty simple.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. That's great. So what else would you like to let folks know? Have we covered?
I think we covered most of it. I think that when you and I, you know, initially spoke, I'll just put it out there. Amy and I were both at the rally down at the State House. I guess it's a couple months ago now. And that was the Tap Trees, Not Vermonter rally. And, you know, I'm really grateful for the people who put themselves out there. So John Rogers, James Ellers, and Allison Despathy, among others, who really put themselves out there to bring the voice of Vermonters and to highlight the fact that they deserve and need to be heard. And I think that they're doing a fantastic job of getting that message out there. And I think that there are a number of candidates this year who reflect those same perspectives and the same values. And so I would just encourage people across the state who might be listening, you know, pay attention to the candidates this year. Pay attention to the positions that they're taking. Let's try to put politics aside and let's put Vermonters first.
Right. I mean, it's the party system, you know, was never meant to divide us like this. You know, we were still supposed to find the common ground.
That's right. And I think, you know, as a Democrat, I'm trying to look out for the working class, and we've made it completely unaffordable for the working class to be here. One of the perspectives I have on my website is, you know, around the 1980s Democrat, right, when we were coming out of or still in an inflationary period. And the National Democratic Platform was very articulate about the fact that they were very focused on minimizing expenses for the working class at that point in time. You know, they were certainly not adding anything additional. They knew that they were at their max. And I think that's important to realize that. And they actually said it was important for economic equity. To really to look out for that working class and make things more affordable for them. So, you know, that's what I'm trying to carry forward. And I think when people are like, well, wait a minute, you don't sound like the typical Democrat. And I said, you know, perhaps not now. But I think if you look at the roots of people who have always called themselves liberals or Democrats, then they've kind of like lost their way. And so I think there's an opportunity here for people who feel strongly about that and what that always represented to try to bring some of that back again.
Yeah, I do encourage people to get back involved and look back around, because a lot of folks have, like you said, just sort of shut it out. They got so overwhelmed and got so discouraged. But I do hear more and more people saying what you said, you know, I need to get involved or we're going to leave. And people, some folks are digging in their heels and stepping up. It's amazing. Yeah.
We need more.
Yes, we do still need more.
We need more.
Folks.
And I, you know, what I'm finding is, I think as I get out there and I talk to people who could be fantastic future candidates, you know, people again who have been here for generations or business owners, and sometimes it's just not the right time for them to run. But I think we've got some really fantastic candidates in the wings here. And I'm hoping that at least, you know, my run can also serve for future inspiration for others, you know, who are working and, you know, business people and have families and have other things going on. But again, it's a civilian legislature. And I think that if you feel passionately about this, and again, you've got the skills, the capacity, the capability to do it, think about running at some point in the future.
Right, because like you were saying, it shouldn't be a career thing, or it wasn't intended anyway to be a career. You're supposed to still have, you know, one foot in the real world with the rest of us.
Okay.
And that the more people who have that perspective, yeah, it is definitely better. Yeah. Oh, fantastic. And let's see, I'm looking at my notes. I think I've covered. And so common ground. What do you think is? Speaking of the legislature and how it's imbalanced, and a lot of folks, that's where a lot of their complaints are coming from right now, is that it seems so tipped in the Democratic favor that they're just overrunning anything the Republicans or the one libertarian, you know, has to say, who happens to be there. What are some of your ideas for being more congenial with your fellow housemates there?
I think that's a tough one. You know, I've been forewarned that it's going to be difficult to go in there, you know, with the perspectives that I have. I've got a strong spine. I always have. So wish me luck with that. But I think it's about compromise, right? Mm. And I think it's being able to go in and to understand who you're representing again as a constituents and keeping that top of mind. I would say that some of what has come through is not representative of what the constituents want. It's coming through special interests, and behind the special interests is corporate money. And I think people need to be really careful about that. I think we're going to see some highlights on that probably coming in the future. But if you look behind some of this green energy, I mean, green energy is just a wrapper for all things good. Of course, we want green energy. Of course, we want to save the environment. There are really deep pockets. There is corporations. There's private equity pouring into that. And when you start looking behind the scenes in terms of how that is funded, I think people would have a very different perspective. And I think that there needs to be, again, that accountability with the legislature to understand that as they're developing policies and taking advice and data and perspective and opinions of special interests, that they understand who is behind, you know, some of these activities. So that common ground, I think we're Vermonters, we care about just the beauty of our state 100%. We care about the environment. How we go about that needs to be looked at. And so forcing people into some of these green energy initiatives, again, when we know there's some big money behind it, may not be the right way to go about that, for example.
Yeah, and I think some of the major complaints are who have been allowed to testify, who have not been allowed to testify, that there seems to be a real shutting out of common folks.
I've heard that in some of the committees as well. It'll be interesting to dive in and to watch some more of those. I think that some of those committee chairs do a better job of making sure that there truly is balance and making sure that the different perspectives are truly heard. Mm-hmm. We need, to me, that is critical to the ethics of our legislature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what are some of the things, the high points you're looking forward to the most over the next couple months?
I'm very excited to get out in the community the next couple months. This is going to be a whirlwind. It already has been a whirlwind, I think, over the past month, which I'm incredibly energized. I'd say really more energized than I have been in a really long time. So, I mean, that just is a good indicator that I'm headed down the right path. And I've been just like overwhelmed by meeting some just absolutely fantastic people, right? The diversity of thoughts, the diversity of experiences, and the number of people supporting me has been fantastic. So I'm excited to get out there in the community to get through August 13th. and I, you know, play to win, and I'm going to win. And then, you know, after that, it's still staying out there, obviously, till the November election. But I can't wait to get in there in January and just roll up my sleeves. I think it's going to be a fantastic just experience in general. And excited to go to work for everybody here in the Washington Chittenden district.
Fantastic. Well, folks, we have had another exciting edition here of the 5-8 show, speaking with another candidate here for the Waterbury Chittenden district. We have been speaking with Elizabeth Brown. And where can they reach you again? Your website?
It's elizabethbrownforvermont.com.
Fantastic. All right. Thank you for taking the time to come in and talk with us.
Thanks for having me, Amy. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, let's stay in touch.
Sounds good.
I'm sure we can have a lot of fun going forward.
Yes, we
here
will.
Together. All right, folks, we are almost at the top of the hour. Thank you for joining me for the 5-8 show. Previous episodes of the 5-8 show can be found at amyvt.com. This one will be posted there pretty soon. And then Jerry will be in on Friday with another episode. And if she's not, then we'll replay this one. So it'll get a couple of airplays here before the week is out. Thanks for coming in, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Amy.
All right. Y'all have a great afternoon. Enjoy this summer weather. Thank you. Bye-bye.
But no, I can't. what I want to achieve. I'm free to believe what I want.